My name is Mary Mack, and I am the Executive Director of ACES, the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists. We are having another edition of our TAR Talk on the porch with John Kredenick and Tom Ricks, with a very, very special guest and friend of ACES that John will introduce you to in just a second. John, what are you drinking on your virtual porch?
Good afternoon, Mary Mack. It is always a pleasure to see you. It's summertime. It's kind of hot out, a little humid. So I'm drinking what is now my favorite beer, the Stella Artois. It's just got the right amount of sugar in it, and I'm a lighter beer fan. So to cool off today, it's a Stella for me. How about you, Mary?
Well, I have none other than a summertime blackberry limoncello prosecco. I had to really dig deep for that one.
I'll just say, watch out. Those things sneak up on you. So if you've had two or three, we're going to have to cut you off. You might rock that rocking chair right over backwards. Tom Ricks.
Oh, I might laugh at your jokes, John.
Hey, John, I just want to clarify one thing. Did you say when it comes to drinking beer, you're a lightweight? Is that what you said? I wasn't sure I caught it exactly.
I am a lightweight in general.
As you know, Mr. T, today started awfully early to me, so I'm just having a Red Bull, straight Red Bull, so that I can actually see through the rest of the day.
There you go. And our guest today is Bill Dimm, an old friend, CEO of Hot Neuron, the creator of Clustify, and a visitor. We hope a frequent visitor to TAR Talk. What are you having to drink? Keep rocking in that chair, Bill.
I'm having a Monster Energy drink today because it's one of those days.
Well, that's two of you. All right, then I'll expect you to talk fast and act crazy, so that'll be good. I'm mellowing out. Hey, today we have an exciting topic for you. I think it's a lot of fun. It's called FOMO, or fear of missing out. So many of you know, we all know Herb Roitblatt, but many of you may know that he recently released a paper called FOMO, or fear of missing out, which provided a mathematical analysis of relevance recall for TAR projects. Now, EDRM published a paper, and they called it a game changer. So we wanted to read it and see for ourselves, frankly, since Herb's an old friend of ours. And Tom did an early TAR case with Herb and using his software. I think it was the second or the third TAR case. Which was it, Tom? I forget sometimes.
It depends on whether Judge Peck is on the line. If he's not on the line, hey, we were first. Otherwise, we're second.
Hey, we invited Herb to join us, and he had a conflict for this session, but we expect to have him and hope to have him join us on the virtual porch one day soon. Bill Dimm, many of you know, is one of the leading IR scientists, that's information retrieval, and of course a past visitor. He wrote a response to Herb's FOMO paper, questioning some of the assumptions and maybe the math of the paper. Now, I looked at both Herb's paper and Bill's math, Herb's appendix to be precise, and decided there was no way that I could understand it, let alone talk about it on TAR Talk. So I looked at Tom as an engineer by training. Even he was stumped, though. So we decided we better invite somebody like Bill to join us on the virtual porch and help provide the TAR Talk take on Herb's paper. So thank you for joining us, Bill, and don't drink that monster too quickly. We got a long way to go here.
Happy to be here.
So let me get right to it. You know, with the advent of machine learning for lawyers in the legal world, and particularly for document review, came, as Herb pointed out correctly, the realization that we could measure the success of the review using simple statistics to validate and measure the recall we'd obtained. Now, the truth was you could do this even in the old days with manual review, but we never thought to do it, or nobody raised it, or at least those who did didn't raise it loudly enough. But with TAR, suddenly the focus was on TAR recall. How many of those relevant documents did we get? And there was a debate whether 75% or 80% was enough. And this discussion, quite naturally, with lawyers and more, others, led to what Herb called FOMO, or the fear of missing out. And the notion simply is this: if you only found 80% of the relevant documents, what ones did we miss? What if something critical to the case slipped through the 20% crack? And that led to a lot of debate and a lot of angsting over whether that 80% was enough, or we should be doing the gold standard recall, which is a whole nother discussion because, of course, humans don't find all of them either. So Herb put out a paper that really was designed to answer the question and to conclude, or at least he did conclude, that we weren't missing out, that 80% recall actually found not all the relevant documents, but the relevant facts. And that's a key point for discussion here. So Herb started out by pointing out the difference between finding relevant documents and finding the key facts. The relevant documents might have one or many key facts or facts, but it doesn't mean you have to find every relevant document to become aware of a fact or a key fact. In fact, we know this as trial lawyers, that there may be millions of documents in the case and tens of thousands of relevant documents, but typically in front of a jury, you only use a handful of documents. So the question Herb had is, notwithstanding that at 80% recall, you're not finding 20% of the relevant documents, are we missing key facts? And so his question is, what are the chances that a key fact will be missed as opposed to another relevant document? And this is where Herb turned to the math, and we're going to talk about it. But according to Herb, the math showed that this was highly unlikely. A less than 100% recall means certain documents are missed, but it doesn't mean that key facts are missed. And he takes two approaches to his analysis, which we'll talk about a little bit here as we go along. But one approach was to analyze the probability of a new fact being missed in the missed set that wasn't covered in the responsive set, the main 80%. And he concluded, using math that I won't pretend to understand, that there was about a 2.6% chance that a fact will be absent from the identified set and found in the missed set. And this was assuming there are an unlimited number of facts to be found. When he made the distinction about those key facts that really made a difference in the trial, those percentages were even lower and better. So the question is, does this give us, and should it give other lawyers, comfort that even at an 80% recall, and with Cal we often go much higher, but even at 80%, yeah, there are going to be some relevant documents missed, but we're not missing the key facts, the ones that are important to trial. So what was your reaction, Tom, to Herb's paper?
You know, John, I got to tell you, and I really want Bill to get into the math and talk about what's behind this, but my initial reaction was kind of interesting when I looked at it. That is, what we have seen in the TAR world is people fighting about 80% recall. Is it enough? I thought we were past that issue. I didn't think this was something we were really discussing anymore, and I really don't think we are. What Herb's paper was really doing was taking a different perspective on that issue. In other words, is 80% enough? I'm going to figure that out based on what facts we might be missing. And, you know, EBRM said, yeah, it's a game changer. To me, I didn't see it as a game changer because, frankly, I thought we're past that issue. I don't think we have to convince people anymore that 80% recall is going to be sufficient for a TAR review. So I actually looked at it and I said, hey, that's great. I really appreciate the fact that we're focused on it, but it wasn't something that I really wanted to, wanted to worry about. So I really didn't pay much attention to math because, like you, when I started looking at it, I said, yeah, that's enough math for me for the day or for the year. So I pretty much said it's a great thing to have, but from a TAR perspective, it wasn't critical to any of my analysis, and I didn't see it as a game changer. I thought it was interesting. I thought the point was interesting. But it wasn't something that I really focused on until we started talking about it more. So that was my perspective, my initial take on it.
Bill, tell us about the math. Tell us how we might analyze this kind of problem.
Okay, so I'm going to focus on the part of the paper where Herb comes to the conclusion that there's a 2.6% chance of missing the fact that you're looking for. And I'm going to present the math a little differently from the way it's done in his paper to try to highlight the important points without getting too buried into complex math. The first thing we should say is that that calculation that gives us 2.6 probability of missing the fact is assuming that we're looking for one fact. So if we're looking for two facts and we say we need to find both of those facts to prove our case, and if we miss one of them, we're really going to have a problem, then the probability is going to be higher than that 2.6%. So in coming up with the 2.6%, let's step back a bit and look at a simpler case. Suppose we know that the fact that we're looking for occurs in only one of the responsive documents. If we hit 80% recall, the probability of missing that fact is 20%. So that's pretty dangerous. There's definitely a substantial chance of missing that guy. On the other hand, if the fact occurs in two of the documents, and if we further assume that when we find facts, we find them randomly, meaning that if the first document containing that fact happens to wind up in the discard set, that doesn't make it any more or less likely that the second document containing that fact will wind up in the discard set. If we make that assumption, then the probability of missing both of the documents containing that fact would be 4%. So that's 0.2 squared because there are two documents. And if the critical fact that we're looking for occurs in three documents, then it's going to be 0.2 raised to the third power, or 0.8%. So what you see is that the real critical thing in the entire calculation is how likely is it that the fact that we're looking for occurs in only one of the responsive documents. Because if it occurs in more than one document, the chances of all documents containing that fact winding up in the discard set are not very high. Also, keep in mind, we are assuming we're encountering these facts randomly. To the extent that all the documents containing a particular fact use similar words, and TAR is going to tend to either find all of them or miss all of them, so these probabilities are going to be off. So that's an important assumption to keep in mind. Now, when Herb does his calculation, he doesn't assume that the fact occurs in only one document or only two or only three. He actually considers all those possibilities and gives different probabilities to them. And so that's going to be critical in determining what that final number is going to be and whether or not it's realistic for e-discovery. So using the parameters that he chose for his model, the probability of the fact occurring in only one of the responsive documents is 8.8%. The probability of it occurring in two is 16.5%. Probability of occurring in three is 20.7%. Probability of occurring in four is 19.4%, and it goes down from there. So in his model, there's fairly small probability that the important fact occurs in only one document. And that's why he winds up with a result where there's only a 2.6% chance of missing that fact. If you change the assumptions around to say, well, there's a much better chance of that important fact occurring in only one document, there's a much higher chance of missing it, possibly as high as 20%. And so the question at the end of the day is this assumption realistic for e-discovery or not? And that's going to depend a lot on what we consider to be a fact and what the data looks like.
So, John, want to get your thoughts on that. What do you think about what's your reaction to kind of that mathematical approach? Does that make it easier for you?
Not necessarily easier, but I think we've got to talk about what facts mean and how facts are found. And I think the big distinction here is the difference between doing a review for production purposes and a review for trial. And I certainly want to get that point on the table as you dig in. The difference is this. When I'm doing a review for production, my goal is to take reasonable efforts to find responsive documents. What have they asked for, and have I taken reasonable steps to find them? yes, there's an overlap in that these documents may elicit facts or lead you to ask those questions to elicit facts, and they are important. But first of all, the statistics show that you're not likely to miss facts because facts don't appear singly in one document and no other document. But more important, trial lawyers get to the facts a lot of different ways. It starts with a client interview. It starts with witness interviews. You look at things and then you think and you say, this is what I need to find. And when you know what you're looking for, search can be very helpful. Again, you don't have to use search to find all the documents that contain a fact. Just one good one is all you need. That's why you only have a few exhibits in trial. Putting aside that jurors, like other all humans, can only take in so much of that stuff. They only need one or two email admissions or what have you. You don't have to find them all. So the key here is TAR saves money on production reviews, dramatic amounts of money for clients, and also does a heck of a job at finding the stuff that will make the trial lawyer head in the right direction. So what's your take, Tom?
John, you and I come at this from very much the same perspective. I looked at this and I said, this is great. It really does help give people confidence, at least some level of confidence, even mathematically and statistically, that we're not going to be missing much. 80% is probably pretty good. But then I sat and thought, okay, so how many lawyers are convinced by statistics if they don't want to believe it? That would be statistically zero. Right? So I'm not sure that that does it for a lot of lawyers. But the other perspective is this, and as you, kind of as you pointed out, the federal rules of civil procedure don't require us to produce facts. They don't require, they require us to produce documents that are responsive to requests. Proportionality is determined on the basis of how hard it is to find those documents. If we get into the question of whether I have to go look for another fact, it becomes very, very difficult. So to me, I said, this is a nice analysis to help illustrate that 80% is a fine enough number, but I just didn't think from a TAR perspective that it really matters as much as the issue of finding documents. It gives us a perspective on the facts, but it really, the production that you have to worry about is based on the documents that you find and proportionality. So I read it and I was thankful for it, but I didn't think it was going to overly impact the way that I manage projects.
Tom, and you have done, Dr. J's done, I've kibitzed in on a number of what we call aspectual recall studies, and I think they lend some support to this proposition. For our listeners who aren't tuned into aspectual recall, quite simply, the question was, if we do a review for responsive documents and there are 10 issues in the case, when we hit that 80% mark, how many of those other issues did we hit as well? And Tom, you know, the answer is just about all of them or all of them.
Yeah, typical results show that if you get to high levels of recall generally, you're going to get to high levels of recall with most of the issues that you found to be important in the case. And I think, you know, that goes back to Bill's point about the random nature of this assumption. And I guess I would ask Bill real quickly, how does the fact that Cal, for example, does get to these issues – and that features are going to be kind of similar relating to issues, so they're going to pull those facts out. How does that impact this general analysis, Bill?
Well, the generally speaking, when Cal is doing things based on patterns, it's going to tend to find everything or nothing on a particular topic. You know, when you turn the crank enough in Cal, you're really gonna pick all the low hanging fruit first, and so to miss an issue completely is probably not very likely, because it's going to be easier to find a few documents from one issue than to find every single document from a different issue. So I'm not too surprised by that result.
And Bill, if I could jump in, you've put out papers and talked about supplementing cal, adding to cal through clustering. And I would guess that one of the reasons is to make sure there aren't a group of documents that may be got missed by cal that might have one of those key facts. Is that a fair statement of some of the work you've done?
Yeah, well, the clustering aspect, combining it with cal, the idea there is to make sure that you see good examples of a diverse set of responsive documents from the very beginning. When you're doing cal, you can tend to wind up without doing the clustering stuff. You can tend to end up reviewing a lot of similar documents adjacent to each other in the review, because you're always reviewing things that have highest probability of being relevant, and those are going to be things that are similar to things you've already marked as relevant. By doing the clustering, we force it to avoid reviewing stuff that's too similar to what you've already reviewed, so that you can see a bigger picture of all the different types of relevant documents early in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should note, by the way, when I mentioned the spectral recall, that Maura Grossman and Gordon Cormack have also done studies, peer-reviewed studies, that showed that cal was very good at finding all the issues, even though you're just looking for responsive. Tom, you've done a lot of these cases. You ever heard of or witnessed one where people look back and missed a key document? Has that happened yet?
Well, you know, the answer to that is no, but I do have to qualify that, right? Because at the end of the day, the universe that the lawyers look at are the things that were produced, right? So we don't go back a whole lot to find that kind of stuff. But I will tell you, it will happen in linear review anyway. You're not going to do any better. I had a case where I looked at a document 300 times before the trial and had no clue what it meant until I was sitting in trial and heard a witness talk. So it happens. Could it happen here? Yeah, it could happen here.
Bill, how about you?
You've been involved in a lot of cases. Well, unfortunately, most of the time our software goes out the door and the client uses it, and I don't necessarily see what the data looks like. But I will give you an example along those lines that I think is interesting. One time I was helping a client analyze the recall that they were hitting, based on where they stopped in their sorted list of documents. And what we did is we had them mark the documents as whether or not they were responsive and whether or not they were actually important. And we measured the recall they got with respect to responsiveness and importance. And we found, by the way, that roughly 10% of the responsive documents are actually considered to be important, based on whatever their criteria was, the lawyers, for being important. And we found that when you get to say, 70% recall with respect to responsiveness, that might be more like 85% recall with respect to importance, meaning the important documents are tending to wind up closer to the top than just your average responsive document, which is a little surprising, because when we train the system, we train based on whether or not something is responsive. We never told the system what an important document looks like. In trying to understand that result, my best guess was that when they were reviewing training documents, they were much more consistent about reviewing important documents and marking them as responsive, whereas things that were marginally responsive but not important, maybe they're less consistent. But that's just one case. Obviously, you haven't tested that across multiple cases, so you can't conclude too much from it. But there actually might be some hope that TAR can actually do a better job of getting the important stuff to the top, so less likely to miss something important.
So the key takeaway, TAR Talk, on Herb's paper is, number one, we commend Herb for trying to dig into this issue, because no matter how much we talk about TAR being more effective than linear review, there are still people who are concerned, whether you talk 80% or 90% or 75%. They're worried, are they missing out? And, of course, that leads them to want to review more documents, which costs more. And all the early studies on linear review said you're likely to miss more key documents with that approach. But the other point, I think, is for the trial lawyers among us, which is, look, those facts are going to come out because you're going to be looking for them. You're going to see a hole in your case. You've got fact A, fact B, and fact D, and you need fact C. So whether or not that came out in the initial review, you're going to look for it, you're going to find it, you're going to get it from your witnesses. And I think the bottom line here is don't let FOMO get in the way of using TAR both to become more efficient and to save clients on the cost of discovery, because the chances of missing out a key fact are extremely low and much lower than with any other process. Any more to add, Tom, before we thank Bill and close it out?
No. I think you hit that nail right on the head, John. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Bill. Bill, we'll always have a chair, a rocker for you on our virtual porch, and we hope you come back and visit us many times. And thank you, Mary, for setting us off, and thank you, ACIDS, for sponsoring these TAR Talks. We love doing them, and we hope you enjoyed it. Tune in for the next one.
Rock it up.